Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. For WNYC's 90th birthday summer, and the actual anniversary is today, by the way, so it was July 8th, 1924, that WNYC went on the air. And we are taking a three-day trip on the show through some of our most intriguing archives. Maybe you heard our sound sampler yesterday of Greenwich Village in the late 50s and early 60s as heard on WNYC. Today, something entirely different. Kurt Vonnegut as heard on WNYC in a very unusual series of monologues he did back in 1998 here called Kurt Vonnegut Reports from the Afterlife. For example, he met Dr. Fred Mattson, who invented the fat substitute marketed as Olestra.
This is Kurt Vonnegut, WNYC's reporter on the afterlife. During today's controlled near-death experience, I spoke to Dr. Fred H. Mattson, dead at 76, co-discoverer of Olestra, a combination of fatty acids with absolutely no nutritional value. Olestra in, Olestra out. It is now being used in snack foods. I asked him if it had any effects on human bodies at all during its zero-calorie, zero-cholesterol trips through their digestive tract. He said that some of his critics claimed cramps and diarrhea.
A little taste of Kurt Vonnegut reporting from the afterlife on WNYC. And we will hear much more now. And along for this ride is former WNYC producer and news director, former Marketplace New York bureau chief. Some of you know him from the air, Marty Goldenson, who produced the series. He currently produces my television show, BrianLehrer.tv, on CUNY TV. And he recruited Kurt Vonnegut for this and produced this series. So we brought Marty Goldenson in along for this ride and to give us some background. Hi, Marty.
Hi.
Remind us, what was the premise of this series?
Well, let me back up one spot, which was back in the in those days, in 98, Laura Walker, I think it was, in some
president
with her,
of WNYC.
President of NYC, had this wonderful idea to bring on what she called New York Voices. So we did a wonderful series of New York Voices, and Kurt was one of them. That's right. And there were other ideas, bringing on poets and writers, and it was really nice. And I knew Kurt from the Reagan nomination convention out in Detroit, which he covered for a radio station I was then
1980
doing. Right, exactly. And I noticed then that he was the best radio writer I'd ever heard.
Really?
Because we're back in New York, and there's two pieces of tape he got out in Detroit, and we went through a neighborhood that was all still burnt out from the riots, right? And another one that was beautifully rebuilt. And I said, and I played him these two pieces of tape, which in the radio lingo is known as actuality. And I said, write the continuity. That's the words that go between these two pieces of tape. And I would have written, we went through some really bad neighborhoods, and then we saw some good neighborhoods.
Normal news director stuff.
Exactly. And he wrote these words. We saw battlefields where anger won, and battlefields where pity won. And I thought to myself, no wonder I'm not a wealthy, respected writer.
Or that's why Kurt Vonnegut is Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah.
So let's go to another clip.
Oh, yeah, and the pretense of this, so it's clear to people. Kurt gets on a gurney and goes down into almost the afterlife, almost dead. Dr. Kevorkian puts him on the gurney and wheels him on the precipice of death there, down the blue tunnel of death. But about 100 yards shy, he said, there's a vacant lot. And on the book that was made out of it, which I have right here, which I'll give you, Brian.
God bless you, Dr. Kevorkian.
And right.
It was the book version.
Right. It's all these with an introduction. Notice the cover drawn by Jules Pfeiffer of
Kurt Vonnegut on a gurney.
On a gurney. It was done on the bus to the Hamptons. Where they bumped into each other.
So ostensibly he's returning from a near-death experience or a partly dead experience, as you were just describing. Somehow he puts it in the assisted suicide context of getting Dr. Kevorkian's name in there, who, of course, at that time was much in the news for, you know, being the apostle
right,
of
assisted
suicide.
Right, and he wanted it done right technically, so he had it done at the Huntsville, Texas death chamber.
Uh-huh, where they know how to kill people.
Right.
Except that other recent guy who they didn't do such a good job on.
Back then they were bad.
But he refers to them, to these experiences, Kurt does variably, as controlled near-death experiences, partly dead, half dead. There's one, I think, there in which he says three-quarters dead. So we'll hear some of those as we play some more of these. And you're listening to WNYC FM HD and AM New York, WNJT FM 88.1 Trenton, WNJO 90.3 Toms River, WNJY 89.3 Netcong, and WNJP 88.5 Sussex, New York and New Jersey Public Radio on WNYC's 90th birthday. And Kurt Vonnegut seemed to include in this series some of his favorite and least favorite people from history.
And some random he found in the obit section of that day's New York Times.
And we'll hear a few of each. So, for example, here is Vonnegut's full two-minute afterlife experience with the legendary American socialist Eugene Debs.
During what has been almost a year of interviewing completely dead people while only half dead myself, I asked St. Peter again and again to meet a particular hero of mine. He is my fellow Hoosier, the late Eugene Victor Debs of Terre Haute, Indiana. He was five times the Socialist Party's candidate for president back when this country still had a strong Socialist Party. And then, guess what? Yesterday afternoon, none other than Eugene Victor Debs, organizer and leader of the first successful strike against a major American industry, the railroads, was waiting for me at the far end of the blue tunnel. We hadn't met before. This great American died in 1926 at the age of 71, when I was only 4 years old. I thanked him for words of his, which I quote again and again in lectures. As long as there is a lower class, I am in it. As long as there is a criminal element, I am of it. As long as there is a soul in prison, I am not free. He asked me how those words were received here on earth in America nowadays. I said they were ridiculed. People snicker and snort, I said. He asked what our fastest growing industry was. The building of prisons, I said. What a shame, he said. And then he asked me, how is the Sermon on the Mount going over these days? And then he spread his wings and he flew away.
Kurt Vonnegut with, I guess, one of his heroes. Did you talk to him about Eugene Debs and his feeling about Eugene Debs? Our guest, former WNYC producer Marty Goldenson, who produced this series of Kurt Vonnegut reports from the afterlife for WNYC in 1998.
Yeah, I mean, he was an old lefty, but mostly was a humanist. You know, he was actually honorary president of the American Association, you know, of Humanists, which had no responsibilities, by the way, whatsoever.
They didn't actually have to do anything.
No, you just had to be kind to people, and that's how you were part of the organization. But you would ask me how where these were recorded, or
did
how this happened.
Did you actually go to Huntsville, Texas, penitentiary there where they commit executions?
You got to remember, by the time these were, he was 76 by the time I started to record these, so he wanted to stay in his townhouse on 49th Street, I believe it was. And it was interesting to record it. You bring a portable tape recorder, you know, back then actual tape, not digital, and it stuck in his mouth. He had written one a week, you know, on a deadline for me. And but he would get a phone call every 3 minutes. So there's a lot of editing. But it was a wonderful thing. He decided to have nobody filtering his line, nobody answering it. He just gave his phone number out, and people who read his books called him, and friends called him, and he had mastered the art of the one-minute phone call. And he had a way of talking, saying, hearing what he wanted to hear, thanking, and hanging up very nicely, 60 seconds. So we would edit out all the phone calls. And so what you're hearing is actually interrupted five or six times.
That's pretty funny. And he mastered the art of the one-minute trip to the afterlife, judging on the length of many of these pieces. By the way, listeners, we can take some calls interspersed with these clips. How has Kurt Vonnegut influenced you? Do you have a favorite Vonnegut book or character or story? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692.
And let me say, he loved this station. And he did this as support for the station. And in the introduction, it thanks me and then says it thanks the station for paying him a buck a word, which we, I don't think we ever, actually ever did. And he wrote this many sentences about WNYC in the introduction, but I'll read one because it's the 90th anniversary of this wonderful place. He says this sentence. It's short, Brian. WNYC does what no commercial radio or TV station can afford to do anymore. WNYC satisfies the people's right to know, as contrasted with, as abject slaves of high-roller publicists and advertisers, keeping the public vacantly diverted and entertained.
And, you know, there aren't many celebrities, if I can use that word, who, when I find out that they listen, I get chills. But when I found out that Kurt Vonnegut was a listener to this show, around that time, I was like, oh, my God, I'm talking to Kurt Vonnegut some mornings. You know, I better get this right.
Yeah, exactly. He was a publicist himself at one point, briefly, for he wrote early on for, you know, General Electric. So that's where his hatred of that, he comes by, honestly.
So here's another of Vonnegut's afterlife experiences with an admired person, Sir Isaac Newton.
This is Kurt Vonnegut, WNYC's reporter on the afterlife. During my controlled near-death experiences, I've met Sir Isaac Newton, who died back in 1727, as often as I've met St. Peter. They both hang out at the heaven end of the Blue Tunnel into the afterlife. St. Peter is there because that's his job. Sir Isaac is there because of his insatiable curiosity about what the Blue Tunnel is, how the Blue Tunnel works. It isn't enough for Newton that, during his 85 years on Earth, he invented calculus, codified and quantified the laws of gravity, motion, and optics, and designed the first reflecting telescope. He can't forgive himself for having left it to Darwin to come up with the theory of evolution, to Pasteur to come up with the germ theory, and to Albert Einstein to come up with relativity. I must have been deaf, dumb, and blind not to have come up with those myself, he said to me. What could have been more obvious? My job is to interview dead people for WNYC, but the late Sir Isaac Newton interviews me instead. He got to make only a single one-way trip down the tunnel. He wants to know what it seems to be made of. Fabric or metal or wood or what? I tell him that it's made of whatever dreams are made of, which leaves him monumentally unsatisfied. St. Peter quoted Shakespeare to him. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy. This is Kurt Vonnegut, WNYC's reporter on the afterlife.
And he threw a little Valentine to Darwin in there. I want to go right on to one of his least favorite people to meet in the afterlife, the killer of Martin Luther King, James Earl Ray.
This is Kurt Vonnegut, WNYC's reporter on the afterlife. When I went looking for James Earl Ray, confessed assassin of Martin Luther King, on today's controlled near-death experience, I didn't have to wander deeply into paradise. James Earl Ray died of liver failure on April 23rd of this year. According to St. Peter, though, he has so far been unwilling to take a single step into the eternal afterlife awaiting him beyond the pearly gates. His diction and manners were those of an uneducated and despised member of a family which has, for generations, infected our country's polite society with petty and cowardly criminals, and unsightly, dirt-poor failures in any case. he said to me that he wasn't going to set foot in eternity until a prison cell was built for him. "Put me in a cell, and I can be cozy," he said. "Put me in a cell, and I won't give a damn how much time is going by." Actually, he used the S word instead of damn. His conversation is still liberally sprinkled with the N word, despite St. Peter's pleas that he, for the love of God, pipe the hell down. He said he never would have shot the big N word, meaning Dr. King, if he'd known his bullet would make what the big N said and fought for so effing famous all over the effing world. He used the F word. "Because of me and my little old magic bullet," he said, "words of the effing big N have been carved into monuments of marble and inlaid with effing gold, I hear."
Kurt Vonnegut from his 1998 WNYC series, Kurt Vonnegut Reports from the Afterlife. One of the things we're doing on the Brian Lehrer Show this week in honor of the station's 90th birthday, which happens to be today. We did some other things yesterday. We'll do some other things tomorrow. Today it's some samples of this Kurt Vonnegut 1998 WNYC series, where he allegedly visits in the afterlife with people he liked, people he didn't like, and sometimes people who weren't famous at all. For example, a retired construction worker named Salvatore Biagini.
This is Kurt Vonnegut, WNYC's reporter on the afterlife. This morning, thanks to a controlled near-death experience, I was lucky enough to meet at the far end of the Blue Tunnel a man named Salvatore Biagini. Last July 8th, Mr. Biagini, a retired construction worker, age 70, suffered a fatal heart attack while rescuing his beloved Schnauzer, Teddy, from an assault by an unrestrained pit bull named Chele in Queens. The pit bull, with no previous record of violence against man or beast, jumped a four-foot fence in order to have at Teddy. Mr. Biagini, an unarmed man with a history of heart trouble, grabbed him, allowing the Schnauzer to run away. So the pit bull bit Mr. Biagini in several places, and then Mr. Biagini's heart quit beating, never to beat again. I asked this heroic pet lover how it felt to have died for a Schnauzer named Teddy. Salvatore Biagini was philosophical. He said it sure as heck beat dying for absolutely nothing in the Vietnam War.
Ah, and you're laughing. My guest, Marty Goldenson, who produced the series with Kurt Vonnegut in 98. I mean, he's got this sweet story about a guy who died rescuing his beloved dog, and then, boom, it's a commentary on the Vietnam War. And that was so Vonnegut.
Oh, yeah. Completely. Completely.
Right? His writing style in print was completely, for me, replicated in some of these, and that was a perfect example, where it's so simple.
Yeah.
And kind of straightforward and unassuming or fake unassuming, but then, boom, he'd hit you with something like that.
Exactly. No, he just, that's the gracefulness and the simplicity of his writing. And he just little Commodore phrases like, "I interviewed so-and-so being half dead myself," that kind of little phrase, where you get a sense of where he is at.
Victor in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania, has a Kurt Vonnegut memory. Hi, Victor. Thank you for calling in.
Hi, Brian. Thank you for putting me on. When I was 17 years old, I'm 60 now, I used to cut lunch period in school and go out and eat in a diner. And I went to the High School of Art and Design. The day before, I saw in the New York Times an article about Kurt Vonnegut, and I had just got finished reading The Sirens of Titans, which is one of the funniest books ever written. And I was standing on the corner waiting for the light to change, and across the street was Kurt Vonnegut, and he was wearing the same shoes as he was wearing in the New York Times article. And I was looking at his hush puppies thinking, oh, my God, I just read his book. There he is. He was in the Times. I'm cutting out of school. I'm seeing him. I was so excited, right? I went over to him. I said, "Mr. Vonnegut, I've read all the books that you have printed, and you're my favorite author." And he was. And he just looked at me and said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, my name is Victor," and I go across to school across the street from here. And he goes, oh, it's really nice to meet you. And you said a moment ago that he was a humanist. And I don't really know what a humanist was or is. I don't know what that phrase means, but he really was a humanist. He was as interested in me as I was interested in him. And that's my Kurt Vonnegut story.
That's great. And, you know, I have one like that, believe it or not. So you snuck out of school to hear Kurt Vonnegut and speak to Kurt Vonnegut. Kurt Vonnegut was the commencement speaker at my college in my junior year. And it was closed. And I snuck in to my college's commencement. That was Albany, what they call the University at Albany now. At the time, it was SUNY at Albany. I snuck into commencement so I could hear Kurt Vonnegut, and I actually don't remember anything that he said.
Well, he probably said, use sunscreen and don't smoke cigarettes.
Exactly.
Which is what he always said.
He never actually said, but they say he said that. And then in my year, they had some senator from Iowa. And I was like, come on, you know, for last year's class, you had Kurt Vonnegut. But, Victor, I'm going to move on, but thank you very much for that. Great story. Joni in Ridgewood, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joni. Joni, are you there? We'll try Joni in a minute. Marty, what did you want to say?
Oh, I just wanted to tell Victor how Kurt Vonnegut defined being a humanist. He said, it is nothing more supernatural than a handy synonym for good citizenship and common decency.
And then there was his interview from the afterlife with the lesser-known writer Francis Keene on love, marriage, and the New York Times obituary style.
This is Kurt Vonnegut, WNYC's reporter on the afterlife. During yesterday's controlled near-death experience, I had the pleasure of speaking with Francis Keene, a romance languages expert and writer of children's books, who died of cancer of the pancreas this past June 26th at the age of 85. It seemed to me that her generally laudatory obit in the New York Times cut her off at the knees at the very end with this stark sentence. Her three marriages ended in divorce. I asked her about this, and she replied with shrugs and in three different romance languages. Así es la vida, she said. Questa è la vita, she said. C'est la vie, she said. And then, go fly a kite.
So again, a sweet story about a sweet person, but interesting how he got that zinger in there about the Times cutting her off at the knees in their obit by ending it with that she was divorced three times. I guess that was the point of that one.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And a generally laudatory, obit, cutting her off at the knees. And, you know, Kurt, Slaughterhouse-Five, he was a prisoner of war. He endured the Dresden bombing. It's not just a metaphor to him when he says cut off at the knees. This is something he knew and saw.
Let's try Joni in Ridgewood again. Hi, Joni, you there?
Yes, I'm here this time. Hi.
Hi. So?
Oh, I just want to say Kurt Vonnegut was the author that turned me on big time to literature. At 16, I had a very unconventional English teacher. She was wonderful. And she turned us on to Kurt Vonnegut. And I read all of his novels. And one of my favorite that comes to mind is Jailbird. I absolutely love Jailbird. It was related very loosely to the Nixon tapes. And he was appointed appointed to Teenage Affairs in lieu of going to jail. And he was referred to by his colleagues as a Harvard abortion. And I just laughed out loud at that reference. And that's the way he wrote that I love, just his references that were so on the mark, so funny, so hysterical, so sardonic. And I read all his novels, and he really influenced my love of literature. And I even write myself today, and, he really inspired me. I love him.
Joni, thank you so much. And Jailbird is a good reference point from which to set up the last clip we're going to play from Kurt Vonnegut Reports from the Afterlife for WNYC series from 1998, in which he assures executed murderer Carla Faye Tucker that hell does not exist.
This is Kurt Vonnegut, WNYC's reporter on The Afterlife. It is late in the afternoon of February 3rd, 1998. I have just been unstrapped from a gurney following another controlled near-death experience in this busy execution chamber in Huntsville, Texas. For the first time in my career, I was actually on the heels of a celebrity as I made my way down the blue tunnel to paradise. She was Carla Faye Tucker, the born-again murderer of two strangers with a pickaxe. Carla Faye was completely killed here by the state of Texas shortly after lunchtime. 2 hours later, on another gurney, I myself was made only three-quarters dead. I caught up with Carla Faye in the tunnel, about 100 yards from the far end, from the pearly gates. Since she was dragging her feet, I hastened to assure her that there was no hell waiting for her, no hell waiting for anyone. She said that was too bad, because she would be glad to go to a hell if only she could take the governor of Texas with her. "He's a murderer, too," said Carla Faye. "He murdered me." Dr. Jack Kevorkian supervises my trips to near death and back. "Your reporter on The Afterlife has to sign off now. Jack and I have been asked to vacate the lethal injection facility, which must be prepared for yet another total execution. Speaking for both of us, I now say ta-ta."
Ta-ta, Kurt. Did he talk to you meaningfully about death? I mean, the premise of this being, you know, this kind of whimsical series of visits to a fictional afterlife.
Yeah, he did. I think he sort of wanted to get there.
Really? He lived another 9 years after he did this series.
Yeah, that's
with
true.
You in
smoking
98.
Madly, continuously,
really?
And drinking madly, and it apparently preserved him and pickled him.
Although, but when he was 76 and did this?
Yeah, but he did. He did. And I thought he would. He said many times that when you get to a certain age, the world you knew and its values have evaporated. And more importantly, the friends, the peers, the people who populate your life are gone, and you feel like you're already in the afterlife.
Mm. And we'll leave that as the last words of Kurt Vonnegut via Marty Goldenson, former WNYC producer who produced this series with him for WNYC in 98. Kurt Vonnegut reports from the afterlife. Marty, thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. And if you've just tuned in along the way, we're doing this as part of WNYC's 90th anniversary series. Today happens to be WNYC's 90th birthday. And we'll dig into the archives again on tomorrow's Brian Lehrer Show, hearing the voices of Robert Moses and his nemesis, the urbanist Jane Jacobs. That's on tomorrow's show. But coming up next, right after a short break, how the heck does ESPN make money on those World Cup games, even while everybody watches, because there are no breaks except at halftime? Stay with us.